morning, everyone. We're ready to begin to hear our first case, Ogden versus Adderholt, 092953. Mr. Linkowski.
Yes, Your Honor.
May it please the court, my name is Adam Linkowski, and I represent the appellant in this case, Paul Ogden. I would respectfully request 4 minutes of rebuttal time. This is a two-part appeal focusing primarily on the First Amendment, but also an ancillary due process claim.
Let me ask you about that due process claim. I take it that you don't contend that Mr. Ogden's got a due process claim, that you do not contend he's got a property right to the job that he had.
The district court's ruling was significantly confusing, that we thought it was appropriate to appeal on that issue, too. We have not made a federal due process argument. We are not claiming that he had a property interest under the 14th Amendment.
So for federal claims, you have a federal First Amendment claim.
That is correct.
Okay. Everything else is a state law claim.
What's on appeal, yes, that's correct.
And let me just ask you another question. Isn't a due process analysis under the Indiana Constitution the same as under the federal Constitution?
No, it's not, Your Honor.
Look at the McIntosh case. It says the Indiana Constitution has developed a body of law essentially identical to federal due process doctrine. And the Carlborg case says the same analysis is applicable to both state and federal due process claims. So why shouldn't we follow that?
Your Honor, we've cited the Pig case, which basically stands for the proposition that if a state agency has set up a certain procedural right for an employee, regardless of whether he is a merit employee or non-merit employee, that specific procedure needs to be followed. And we have made arguments that there was a procedure that was set up of holding a pre-deprivation hearing, but the rights that should have been afforded were not afforded. And we've also argued.
So then you're saying that McIntosh doesn't apply because there is a procedure set up, even though this procedure, as I understand it, was pretty informal, this pre-deprivation.
This is a procedure strictly under state law, Your Honor. Our point is that under the Pig case, there was a procedure that had been set up. It was required to be followed. Also, there was an executive order, which we've argued, created certain due process rights in procedural due process rights under state law in employees. And I believe the executive order came after the McIntosh case.
Well, I guess the trouble I'm having is where do you get the idea that Judge Stinson addressed a state due process claim in her ruling? Didn't she only enter judgment on the federal, what she thought the federal claims were, and remanded to state court all of the state law claims?
Your Honor, the problem is she went into detail to address Mr. Ogden's claim, which was based specifically on his motion for summary judgment, which was based specifically on state law. So I think that's where the confusion came about. Your Honor, if I would, I would like to move on to the First Amendment issue. This is a very unique situation. The district court based their summary judgment order on Garcetti, which was a case involving a calendar deputy's job, which was to investigate the merits of criminal prosecutions, and was subsequently disciplined when he made a report based on one of his investigations. In that case, the court specifically said that the inquiry into what an employee's official duties were is a practical matter, and that formal job descriptions alone are not enough to establish what those official duties are. Now, I would argue to this court that as part of that practical matter, an employee's official duties can both expand and contract. If an employee is told he has certain responsibilities, but then not allowed to perform those responsibilities. Now, if I may, a brief recitation of the very key facts regarding Mr. Ogden's job. Mr. Ogden was a low-level supervisor. The district court could not have been the district court was absolutely incorrect in concluding that he was a high-level supervisor. He supervised one division within one unit of the Department of Insurance. He supervised a whole two employees. Those employees, as noted in Mr. Ogden's September 17th letter, were Kerry Vavil and David Morgan. His job responsibilities basically involved supervising these two employees and creating rules and policies to govern title insurance. Ogden's supervisor was at the time Chief Deputy Carol Mahalik, who was in charge of the entire Consumer Protection Unit, which included various subdivisions of the Department of Insurance, including bail bonds, investigation, enforcement, consumer services relative to every single type of insurance that the department governed. Ogden's communications involved several matters. One of them, the more minor communication, involved illegal use of a dedicated fund. Even though Mr. Ogden's job description, as contained in the appendix, stated that he was a steward of the fund, we've designated evidence that shows simply that Mr. Ogden had no access to those funds and simply was not allowed, was not told when expenditures were coming out of that fund. In addition, Indiana law provides that the commissioner is in charge of the title insurance fund, 2773.62.
Can we put that aside for a minute? Because one of the cases you really rely on is the Valentino case. And I think there's some real differences between that case and this case, because there the speech was made to someone outside of the workplace. Here it looks to me like we just have an internal workplace dispute.
The Valentino case, that was a sub-argument that I had made. That went to whether this court can create a specific exception to Garcetti. As I read Valentino, I did not see it actually addressing official duties. But even if the court concludes that there is no special exception to Garcetti, the facts of this case are sufficient to demonstrate that there is a material issue of fact regarding whether certain communications made by Mr. Ogden fell within his job duties.
But you agree that he never made any statements to anyone outside of the employment arena?
Yes, that is correct, Your Honor. And as the Garcetti court actually explained, it doesn't actually matter whether a statement is made outside of employment or within employment. The question is whether the statement was made pursuant to his professional responsibilities. Appellants have cited Rankin versus Gregory. I think that case really is not on point because it deals with a professor who was actually very involved in administrating of a specific fund. Mr. Ogden was not. In addition to the illegal use of the dedicated fund, I would also point out that Mr. Ogden made a number of statements concerning matters that involved the entire Department of Insurance or the entire Consumer Protection Unit. And as I've indicated, Mr. Ogden's division within Consumer Protection Unit was very small. Mr. Ogden criticized Ms. Mahalik for violation of state personnel laws by maintaining additional files on employees.
But when you look at the 35 bullets in the request memo, essentially it boils down to why his department should be under different supervision. And isn't that a core work-related subject matter? It's related to his official duties. There are six of his complaints that have to do with potential misconduct, but he still said them when he was working in his official capacity, and it was supporting his argument that TID should be moved out from her.
I'm sorry. I don't think you can look at it just as the whole memo itself. I think you need to look at each allegation that Mr. Ogden made within that memo. There's a split in the circuit court authority, but it's most courts have concluded that the Garcetti analysis is kind of a mixed question of fact and law, and I believe we need to look at each individual allegation that Mr. Ogden has made.
And that's why I was looking at them and saying that 29 of them do relate to his work situation and trying to support the fact that he thinks that the wrong supervisor is there and it should be moved. And there were 6 allegations about misconduct, but that also could be read to support his view that that department should remain under that supervisor, McCallick, I think.
He was also making allegations concerning things that had occurred, though, outside of his specific division with regard to Ms. Mihalik. For example, he spoke about an employee who he believed Ms. Mihalik was violating the Americans with Disabilities Act with regard to, and that employee was not even inside of the was not even inside of the title division. The state personnel laws that
he... Wasn't that an example of how incompetent she was and why she should not be the supervisor?
Mr. Ogden was, I would argue, speaking on behalf of a department whose employees simply were afraid of Ms. Mihalik. I believe that if you look at the allegations one by one, it includes specific examples and analysis where Mr. Ogden has alleged that employees outside of his specific official duties were being subject to harassment by Ms. Mihalik. So I think based on the fact that this is a mixed inquiry of fact and law, we need to let the finder of fact determine whether every single allegation made by Mr. Ogden actually related to his official duties.
I think that's right, counsel. The historical facts are not in dispute here. The only question is the legal consequences that flow from those historical facts. So there's nothing to present to a fact finder here. It's just a question of whether this is citizen speech or employee speech, and your attempt to sort of parse it in the way that you've done by separating out discrete complaints in this lengthy memo asking for the supervisor to be removed is not the right sort of analysis.
I don't, Your Honor, as I've indicated, this is a mixed question of law and fact. All of the cases cited by the Department of Insurance in this case have involved one specific incident. This has involved multiple incidents.
It's one memo. It's one memo making multiple complaints in an effort to have a supervisor removed, and he's making these complaints in his status as the manager of a subdivision of the supervisor's division. It seems to me that's classic employee speech.
Your Honor, I will concede that there were certain things in that memo.
Well, the thing is, the first thing he does is give his overall perspective. She's not made one positive contribution with the exception of hiring Kathy Holbert and himself. And then he lists all these complaints, and then in the last point he says, that unfortunately the detailing of complaints regarding her, blah, 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 have been made necessary due to the fact that even though daily complaints have been made, the situation regarding her mismanagement and terrible working environment within the Consumer Protection Unit continues unabated. So what I'm saying, he's got a beginning saying what her problems are, and he's got a conclusion, and then he just lists all the complaints in the middle. I just don't see how you can separate it.
Mr. Ogden was speaking for the Consumer Protection Unit, which was very upset with Ms. Mihalik.
And they were under her supervision.
Part of it was. Two employees were under his supervision.
And if he's speaking on behalf of that unit, how can you say it's not part of his duties?
Yeah.
because he was also speaking on behalf of other employees, such as the alleged violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act.
What difference does that make?
I'm sorry, I misheard the question.
What difference does that make, that he was speaking not only on his own behalf, but on behalf of other employees?
What that means is there's a question of fact, and we should let the jury, or the finder of fact, determine.
It's an undisputed historical fact.
My time has expired. Can I answer the question, Your Honor?
Please.
Yes. I think since there are a number of allegations in there that may be considered not related to his job duties or related to or that don't arise out of his job duties since they involve employees outside of his job classification, I believe that that is why there is a question of fact.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Steiner.
May it please the court, just briefly on the due process issue, I it appears that we have heard that that Mr. Ogden is conceding the federal due process issue. I don't think there is a federal due process issue. We've talked about that in our brief, so I just rely on what we said there. I also didn't read the district court's decision in any way addressing the state due process issue. She's just decided federal claims in this case. Regarding the First Amendment claim, the one thing we can tell about this case, I think, is that Mr. Ogden was certainly not a classic whistleblower. He was a manager of this title insurance division. No matter how small he tries to make the job seem, he was a manager.
Hold you up just for a moment with respect to the state due process claim, if there is one here. Are you saying that if, when you get back to state court, the state will not assert Judge Stinson's ruling as to preclude Mr. Ogden from pursuing a state due process claim?
I'm not necessarily saying that, Your Honor. To be honest, I do read the law, Indiana law, by and large, to say that we apply in Indiana essentially the same standards for state due process that the U.S. Supreme Court, applies, or this court applies for 14th Amendment due process claim.
Maybe I didn't ask that right, but will you claim that Judge Stinson's ruling precludes that claim from going forward in state court?
It's hard for me to say that one way or the other. I haven't been involved in that. I haven't really even looked closely at the state law claims in this particular case. And so, honestly, I can't say. I know that they've been litigating those issues at this point. The state law claims have already gone back into the state court, and litigation is proceeding on those state law claims at this point. But I do see that the finding that there's no 14th Amendment due process claim could be a problem for Mr. Ogden in the state proceeding.
Because of the similarity with the state constitutional due process.
That's correct. Issue
preclusion.
That's right. Matt, I think the judge tried to be relatively clear that she was just deciding federal claims, but said that if they had an impact on a state claim, she had decided these federal claims, the due process claim, Amendment claim.
Thank you.
Regarding the First Amendment claim, though, we have a division manager whose very job description talked about this statute involving the title insurance fund. To say that when he talks about that misconduct relating to that is somehow not part of his job duties, I think, is a real stretch. In fact, when you look at his look at this memo, which is the center of this whole event, the very first sentence says, "Please consider this my formal request to have the title insurance division removed from the consumer protection and to operate as a direct report or under a different chief deputy." And it was very clear what he was after. It was very much work-related, very much related to his job.
And what about counsel saying because he made reference to some employees that were outside of his particular group that somehow that becomes protected speech?
Well, I did not see any of it.
With a disability, specifically, he argued that.
Well, I do think we look at these things in a in a practical manner, does it relate in general to the job duties? As we said, as this court said in the Tamayo versus Blagojevich case, reporting alleged misconduct against an agency over which one has general supervisory responsibility as part of the duties of such an office. He was a manager. He was involved in dealing with these, various people on a daily basis. If he was aware of what he thought was a problem in the workplace, I think they certainly had a responsibility as an employee to report that, as a manager, to report that to the Commissioner of Insurance. The problem in this case was not the reporting that he made. Of course, it was the way he made the report, the nature, how these things were said. As the commissioner had determined, it appeared to be sort of an ultimatum to the commissioner that here's what it is, move my division or replace Ms. Mihalik or else. Well, he did receive the or else in that situation, maybe not what he wanted exactly.
I don't think Garcetti requires that it that the employee have a responsibility to make the report that's the speech at issue in the case. It just has to relate to the job that the employee is hired to do.
I agree with you, Judge. I'm just responding to his argument, really. I'm saying that if we look at even each of these 35 points that he made, they all relate in some way to his specific job duties. And he tries to say they don't, but they do in any event. And I agree that it's not necessary that they absolutely fall directly within his job description for it to be covered by Garcetti. Because after all, Garcetti says that employee is not speaking as a citizen for First Amendment purposes, when they are acting within the general scope of their job duties, and certainly he was in this particular case. And when we look at the case law that's been cited in the briefs, I think it's just very, very clear. We have the Garcetti cases where we have a person who is working for the government, talks to someone else within the government about work-related matters related to that business. And when they're doing that kind of thing, it's not a situation where the person is acting as a citizen, making a complaint. And then we have the other line of cases, such as the Valentino case that had been mentioned, and the others, the Wayne Scott, the Miller cases, the cases that are cited. There are cases where this is not employee speech to an employer at all. It's someone happens to be employed by the government and talks to someone outside of the agency. It could have been to a reporter. And we know that under Garcetti that the public employees still are protected by the First Amendment if they make, if they go to the press.
Is there anything in the record about Mr. Ogden having a pretty good awareness of how to go to the public with things? Isn't he kind of a celebrated blogger, well-known blogger in the blogging community?
Well, I believe that's true.
But was that in the record?
No, I don't know whether that's in the record or not. There have been some extensive depositions taken of persons, and I can't tell you that I know every single word that was uttered in those depositions, so I'm not going to say that it wasn't mentioned. But, of course, Mr. Ogden's an attorney. He held a responsible position at the Department of Insurance. Certainly he knew how he could expose corruption in a public way if he wanted to do so. This wasn't that situation. That's why I said this wasn't a whistleblower case. Never has been, never will be. This is a case about a manager who was dissatisfied with his immediate supervisor, tensely dissatisfied with his immediate supervisor, who wanted to get his ultimate boss to make changes. And so he put together a memorandum to do that, and that memorandum wasn't successful in what he wanted to have happen, but certainly was related to his employment responsibilities, and he's covered by the Garcetti case. He has no claim under the 14th Amendment. He has no claim under the First Amendment. And, you know, I would just ask that the court affirm the decision of the district court.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Thank you.
You were out of time, Mr. Lankowski, but I'll give you 1 minute.
Okay. Thank you.
We asked you a lot of questions.
With regard to state due process, I think it's very clear that everything we've argued was based on state due process. So I would be very careful and look at that. With regard to the memo, I simply would reiterate that there were many things contained in that memo. Mr. Steiner has now conceded that what was contained in the memo was not directly related to his official duties.
No, he didn't necessarily say that. He just said that, you know, that these duties, I mean, that he was commenting on other employees that were part of the division.
And as I may be wrong, but as I understood his argument, he did say that some of the statements contained within the memo didn't directly relate to his formal job description. And I think when we're going down that road, when we've got multiple different allegations, I think at that point we need to at least let the finder of fact make a determination as to whether those multiple allegations are related to his official duties.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. So we'll look at the briefs and take the case under advisement.